And welcome to Behind the Screams. As always, my name is Ian, and in today's show, we're doing something a little bit different. As you all know, normally on our Patreon channel, we have a series of movies in which we cover non-horror films. So previously, we've covered things like Predator, even though that's really blurring the lines between horror and non-horror. We've done Sin City, we've done Die Hard, and in today's show, we're doing something completely different, and we're going to be doing Dodgeball, a true underdog story. And we have a very special guest with us for this show. If you have listened to my guest appearances on the House That Screams podcast, you'll know him from there. He is the cinema drunkie. He is also the host of the Action Drunkies podcast. How's it going, my friend?
I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this.
No, not at all. I know you had put out, like, across your socials that you were really keen to review some movies that, you know, either weren't horror movies or weren't action movies. Is that right?
Yes.
So I think you kind of jumped at the chance when you found out we were doing Dodgeball. something a bit different for me as well. So you host the Action Drunkies podcast. Do you want to just tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Oh, sure, most certainly. So I am the host of the Action Drunkies podcast. It's me and my co-host, Mac the All-Star. And, you know, we sit there, we talk about action films that we grew up on. And sometimes we talk about new ones, but mostly about the classics and the co-classics and the favorites. We take ourselves very literally because we do it while inebriated at times. So not only are we drunk on action cinema, but we're drunk nevertheless during the recording of those programs. So it's a fun one. It's a fun one to do. And of course, my co-host Mac, he is my best friend, my brother, basically. For the past 30 years, we've made the 30 year mark this year. Actually, we met when we were both six. We're now both 36. So it's great to, like, you know, to do it with somebody you know so long and you've actually grown up as an action fan with, you know, throughout the years. So it's a fun one.
That's so cool. Congratulations on your 30 year friendship there, because that's a pretty big milestone for any sort of friendship. So big congratulations there. Do you want to just tell the listeners where they can find that podcast?
Oh, of course. We post it on Anchor. You can find us also on Spotify, Radio Public, Breaker. You can find the official Twitter account at Action Drunkies on like Twitter, at The Action Drunkies on Instagram and Facebook. And yeah, we're pretty much everywhere that need be. We do have a YouTube account, but it's really just, you know, bland and blank at this point. So I mean, we're definitely gonna be posting stuff on Instagram eventually. I mean, YouTube eventually. But yeah, we're getting there.
That's cool, though. That's cool. Our YouTube was very much like that for a long time, and I was really lucky that one of my co-hosts, Dave, he decided that he was going to start streaming video games and that to our YouTube. So that was like, finally, I can put some content out there that's not just, you know, me sitting in my bedroom being rather boring. But all of those links, all of those things that Rob has just mentioned, they'll all be in the description for this show. We'll also post them throughout our social medias as well. And also, please go check out the House That Screams podcast. I've been lucky enough to guest on there a couple of times. I'm planning, hopefully, to guest on there another couple of times after Christmas. And that's always really, really good fun as well. So please go check out both those podcasts if you have never done it before.
Yeah, you were on the most recent one, the famous one, the controversial one, where I basically I wasn't intending to go into it that bad, but yeah, I kind of eviscerated Nightmare on Elm Street 3 there, and I haven't heard the end of it since.
I don't, personally, I don't even think you were being overly harsh on it. You still gave it like a reasonable rating and that. So I don't think you were that harsh on it. Like, I get it's not for everyone, like, you know, and people's opinions change over time and yeah, like I thought it was fine.
Yeah,
Like, I thought your
I don't
review was
think I know Candy took it pretty hard because Candy's a big fan of the movie. So she took my not too fond of it review as like, "Oh, you hate the movie." And I was like, "I really don't. It's all right. I just don't love it, you know?" And yeah, but I mean I haven't heard the end of
and
that.
you probably never will.
Yeah, most
But
definitely.
but yeah, it's you know, it's perfectly acceptable to be just a bit meh about a movie. So, you know, I didn't have any issues with your review. I thought you were being pretty fair, even if, you know, I thought higher of the movie. But that's the joy of podcasting and things like that. If we all agreed, it would be really boring. Okay, so our social medias, you can find us on Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is at Behind the Screams Podcast. Go to patreon.com/behindthescreams. You can sign up from as little as £1 a month. There we've got the rest of our non-horror series. We've got our This Week in Horror History series. We also are doing a mini series, and we've got merchandise to give away on there as well. So please go check that out. Okay, so Rob, are you ready to talk about this movie?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I'm definitely ready to talk about this one.
Okay, so we are talking about Dodgeball.
This is your spoiler alert. A simpler time.
Dodgeball is a sport of violence, exclusion, and degradation.
A more innocent time.
Make sure you pick the bigger, stronger kids for your team. That way, you can all gang up on the weaker ones.
Ooh, you're out for dodgeball!
Today, there are those who are born to be champions.
Here at Globo Gym, we're better than you,
and we know it!
And then, there are these guys.
Boom, 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 boom.
Do you know why I'm here?
Now, do you mean cosmically?
You have 30 days to pay off your mortgage or you lose your gym.
Who'd want to buy this place anyway?
Okay, we can't just let Globo Gym take us over.
If there was any way in the world we could raise $50,000,
we could play dodgeball.
Line up, ladies!
The name's Patches O'Houlihan, and I'm your new coach.
You gotta get angry!
Guess I'm not really an angry person.
Are you angry now?
20th Century Fox invites you.
Welcome to this year's Las Vegas Dodgeball Open.
To experience the world of dodgeball.
Here's a souvenir for a lucky fan.
With the ultimate underdogs.
The real team needs real uniforms. I hope they fit.
Nice.
You guys suck!
Thank you. Nice to be in Vegas.
You should quit now.
Think I'll take my chances in the tournament.
Yeah, you will take your chances.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché.
Vince Vaughn.
You dig me?
You do have brief moments where you're not completely...
When I'm not completely what? Pathetic.
Ben Stiller.
We should meet.
What?
I said we should date.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Christine Taylor.
You like the rough stuff, huh?
Real.
Freaking naughty.
This summer.
I love you!
I love you, too!
Joni loves Chachi!
Grab life. By the ball.
Ready for the hurricane.
Pepper needs new shorts.
Well, at least that wasn't weird.
Dodgeball, a true underdog story.
You can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
What?
This movie was released in 2004, written and directed by Rawson Marshall Thurber, and stars Ben Stiller, Christine Taylor, and Vince Vaughn. The IMDb plot is as follows. White Goodman is the owner and founder of Globo Gym and would love nothing more than owning Average Joe's gymnasium. Peter LaFleur doesn't want to lose his gym to Goodman, but can't find a way to get $50,000 in time. Peter and his gang of gym buddies think of ways to raise money, finally setting on winning a dodgeball tournament. White Goodman retaliates by creating his own dodgeball team to finish off Peter. Peter's team doesn't do too well until legendary ADAA champ Patches O'Houlihan turns up ready to train them. Okay, so one of the sort of questions I want to ask you before we start, because there's like a group of actors that all sort of seem to, you know, star in each other's movies. You know, got Ben Stiller and Vince Vaughn and Will Ferrell and those sorts. So how big a because this is, like I say, a Stiller and Vaughn sort of production here. So how big a fan of their sort of overall work would you say you are?
On like the majority of work on the whole.
Yeah, just sort of an overall estimation.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed majority of their work. Particularly Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn, I've been a huge fan of for a while, and you know, he really is like, you know, one of those actors that could really play anything, you know. I don't think he quite pulled off Norman Bates, but that's maybe him. but no, he's really great actor, you know, well-rounded actor. But I think he particularly excels at comedy. Like his comedic roles are just fantastic, and like he's great when he's playing off of, you know, Stiller and other guys, particularly in this one. Like Ben Stiller as well. I've been a huge fan of Ben Stiller for a long, long time. I remember being a fan of his show, The Ben Stiller Show, way back in the early 90s. I'm showing my age. but with that one, I used to watch that one. And they're a great pairing, you know, when you see them and stuff. And, you know, you love to see it when they get together. And yeah, I definitely enjoy their works overall, but this one is my particular favorite out of everything they've done. Like, not just together, but like separately.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like as far as comedic roles, this is the one with the, I mean, not even just comedic. This might be my favorite Vince Vaughn movie. You know, I do really enjoy his work in one of his more recent ones, Brawl in Cell Block 99. Which I thought he was fantastic in, you know. But as far as like just his work overall, I got to give it to Dodgeball, because I know you put this out there that you were gonna do this episode, and I immediately contacted you like, hey, you got a guest for the Dodgeball? And he's like, no. Well, I'd like to offer my services because I want to talk about Dodgeball.
Well, I'm super glad you did. So, but to be honest with you, I kind of agree with pretty much everything you've just said there. So the only thing that was maybe different for me, because I'm 29, so I'm like, what, 6-7 years younger than you. So there's not that big an age gap, but there's just a very so slight one. So I was around 12 years old when Dodgeball first came out. And I think for me at 12 years old, this is just like the perfect movie for me, because this movie is, you know, just so quotable. There's so many just hilarious moments that we'll definitely be getting into. So this was like a firm favorite for me. As I've grown up, Vince Vaughn and Ben Stiller, like their back catalogs and things like that, and their overall works isn't really something that I'm massively familiar with, because especially, you know, over the sort of past decade, I've really been trying to, keep myself ingrained in the sort of horror world. And obviously, you know, Stellar and Vaughn don't really feature in there particularly often.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I do agree with you. Out of the two, I always sort of lean towards Vince Vaughn, because I think he has this way of acting that's much more sort of dry humor and quite deadpan at times. And as someone who is from the UK, that definitely sort of suits our sort of style of comedy, I think, as well. So I think he comes off a little bit better over here, whereas sometimes I think Ben Stiller sometimes has a tendency to come off a little bit cheesy.
Yeah.
And don't forget me wrong, White Goodman is the biggest, cheesiest character. But that's what it's meant to be, so it totally works.
Most definitely.
So this movie as well, one of the things that when I was starting to rewatch it, because I haven't actually watched this for a number of years, but it's something I watched loads as a kid, I was blown away because I kind of forgot that just how all-star the cast is for this movie.
Yes.
Like, it's insane. So even if you've got, like, you've got Ben Stiller, you've got Vince Vaughn, you've got Rip Torrance in there, there's Justin Long, there's Alan Tudyk, Jason Bateman, Gary Cole, who else have we got in there? There's Missy Pyle that's been in a few things as well. William Shatner shows up, David Hasselhoff, Chuck Norris, Lance Armstrong, but, you know, that's maybe not such a bright spark.
That cameo by Chuck Norris is legendary. I greatly think of and not to get too ahead of ourselves, the very last line
in the film. I was just waiting to bring this up.
Yeah, it just brings a whole. It's probably my favorite line. Like, out of a movie that's so insanely quotable, that last line is my favorite because it's just so direct.
Yeah, like, it's the perfect ending for this movie because you're not even certain, like, what he's going to say or what he's potentially going to do in that last line. So when he says it and it's perfection. I think it's a fantastic way to go out of the movie. But we can jump about the place. That's perfectly fine. So let's talk about some of these sort of really quotable moments, because there's about 600 of them in this movie. But for me, one of the finest scenes is the scene in the bar, where, you know, the two teams sort of come head to head for the first time.
Oh, yes.
And it's just, you know, it's just Ben Stiller, White Goodman at peak White Goodman. You know, he's saying all these crazy things. He's repeating back what, you know, Peter's saying to him. He's introducing introducing his team, you know, Blade, Laser, Blazer, and it's just so fun. It totally takes me back to my childhood. You know, this, I watch this and I immediately turn in to that teenage boy again, you know, because there's crude and crass jokes in here. Like, this isn't the most highbrow comedy in the world you're ever going to see, but it just transforms me back into that, you know, teenage state, and I love it for that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And that's one of the scenes that I think about when we talk about the film being so quotable, is that face off between them. The save yourself the trouble of losing with these losers in Las Vegas, LaFleur.
Oh, for me, it's I didn't think Nazi Camp got out till 8. Did you decide to skip Arts and Crafts? And then White Goodman just goes, yes, I did. Honestly, I have like 3 pages of notes, and about half of those are just various different quotes just that I've picked up and written down for this movie. So I could spend probably this entire hour just doing that.
The one line that I use to this day, when he said, "Mr. Jokey Joke Maker." I'm still great friends with my ex-girlfriend, and I quote that to her all the time, like when she tries to say a joke and it doesn't quite land. I always respond to, oh, look at you, the jokey joke maker.
Well, I mean, I threw out on Twitter, you know, asking for our listeners' opinions on this movie, and there was most of the people would commented back to us, you know, things like, if you could dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball, or dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge, and all those sorts of, like, the really famous ones. So, like, this really just resonated, I think, for so many people. Like, this was, like, such a big thing for me. Like, I hadn't really seen a movie like this when I had first come out, because every single performance in there is on point. There's not, I don't think there's a weak performance in here.
No, absolutely not. Everybody's in top form as far as comedic performances. I do agree with you that, well, that's obviously, he was going based on, like, how the character sought to be portrayed, you know, this incredibly just cheesy, just over the top villain. You know, but everybody else, like, has, like, that. Well, and Owen, played by Joel David Moore, you know, they're basically going for an aesthetic. And Missy Pye was Fran, Studenovskovich, Studenovinsky. You know, they're definitely going for an overtly silly aesthetic, you know, with the look of their characters. But everyone else seems to be playing it, like, straight and dry. You know, and that's the thing I love about it, you know. That you just have, like, these incredibly great performances, you know, but, like, done from a different perspective. Like, there's some are over here doing it, being silly, you know, over the top, and some of them are playing it straight. But, like, you know, with the, like, especially Vaughn, you know, like he, every line is delivered with, like, a little twinkle in his eye. Like, yeah. One of my favorites is where he's arguing with White in the beginning. Well, they're not really arguing. They're discussing. And White tells him, my gym has shareholders. Yours hasn't even got cup holders. And the way he responds, why would I want cup holders? It's just like, you know, it's a straight line. But, like, the way he delivers it is, yeah, like one of the funniest things. I laugh. Like, I always pause the movie after he delivers that line because I have to laugh, like, 5 minutes before I can continue the movie because it's just so funny.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, though, because Vince Vaughn really does play this as, like, the straight guy, yeah, you know, because he's not being overtly wacky. Like you say, you've got Owen and Missy Pyle and Alan Tudyk as Steve the Pirate, you know, that's fucking
oh,
mad.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Definitely Steve the Pirate.
Yes, I absolutely love Alan Tudyk. He is one of my favorite comedic actors. You know, I think he's fantastic in Tucker and Dale versus Evil. I loved him in Firefly. Even though, yes, that's maybe slightly less of a comedic role, but I think he's a really sort of underrated actor. And he is another one who's just on top form here. And you've got, like, Justin Long as well, who is also kind of playing it a bit straight, but
yeah,
he's just a bit like a puppy dog in this film, isn't
yeah.
he? And
yeah.
I think he plays it really well, because, like, you know, he got this role based off his role in Galaxy Quest, which was with Tim mm-hmm. Allen and Sigourney Weaver and Alan Rickman and all those sort of big famous names. And he comes into this one, and I think he does a really good job in here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I gotta say, I mentioned my ex die earlier. If anyone listens to the House of Screams, Di will become very well known to you because I do mention her a lot. We used to date, we no longer date, but she's become one of my very best friends, and we talk all the time. And her favorite scene is that scene with Justin in the hallway where he bumps into his crush, Amber.
Yeah.
And she's with Derek, her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. I guess you could say he's her boyfriend, but, like, she doesn't seem to very much like him anyway. And you know, she obviously wants to be with Justin, but she's with Derek for some reason. But in the scene where like he reintroduces himself to Derek, he goes, "Hey, Derek, Sweet do, man.
It's
and like this, like yeah, lines like that is just like it cracks us up. And after they leave and they're going toward the elevator, and Derek just like gives him the FU signal with his arms, and Justin just goes, "What?"
And he's like stumbling over his words, and you know, I think it's a really good performance from Justin Long. I think he absolutely nails it. I was going to say something there, but it's just completely evacuated from my head, so I'm sure it'll come back to me before we get there. But one of the things that I really like, it's that sort of thing, because you know, when you're going through this entire movie, that's not necessarily something you're going to come out at the end of the movie and be like, oh yeah, do you remember when Justin Long just went, what? And like, you know what I'm saying? You're going to remember, you know, the you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball thing. But it's those little things for me that's really what elevates this movie. One of my favorite moments is back in that first scene where we see Vince Vaughn and Ben Stiller having that chat about, you know, my gym, your gym, and things like that. And he's like, oh, walk with me, but then shuts the door straight away behind him. Like, it's just one of those things that always gets me. And that's like you were saying with the Vince Vaughn line. And so, yeah, it's just little things like that. And I really do think that it elevates this movie, because for me, there's like three movies that are on like that top tier of comedy with like this sort of general cast, and it's Zoolander, Anchorman, and this movie.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Mine's a little different. As far as like my top comedies, as a matter of fact, there was something on Twitter where somebody asked, like, what are your favorite, like, comfort comedies? And this definitely made it on minds. it made it alongside Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Okay. And what was the other one? It was this one. It was Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, Not Another Teen Movie, and The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Okay, yeah. Oh, you know what? My fiance was pulling her hair out at me because I revealed to her that I hadn't seen The 40-Year-Old Virgin. It's just one of those things that has completely passed me by. It's absolutely on my watch list. I need to get it watched. So bad. Oh, she was so upset.
It's great. It's if you're gonna watch that, make sure you watch the full uncut version. Okay. Like there's a theatrical cut that's about 119 minutes. Don't watch that one. That one's okay. Okay. But watch the one that's like, I believe it's 138 minutes, which is like, it's like, you know, it's 20 minutes extra, but it's completely, all the stuff that they took out of there is, I can't even watch the theatrical cut. I really have to go for like the director's cut. So make sure you get the one that's like 138 minutes long. It's so much better.
Okay. I will definitely try and go do that. One of the other things for me, I have a couple other scenes that I'll bring up, but one of the things for me, again, that kind of just elevates this movie is that every single scene is packed with laughs, even if it's not, you know, the biggest, most memorable scene, because we all remember, you know, the training montage or, you know, the scenes that we've already been talking about and things like that. But even like you say, that scene with Justin in the corridor with Amber, you know, you're still laughing. They're still funny. They're still jokes. And they're landing. There's not a lot in this movie that doesn't land. And I think that's quite a rare thing, especially maybe with more modern comedies as well, is to have so much of it land. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
No, I definitely agree. Like, and I meant to say that I truly do share your sentiment about, it's really the little things, you know, because you like you said, you have the big laughs, like, you know, the big most the ones, the big psych gags that everyone remembers. But then, like, you know, peppered throughout between those big moments are the little things. So it's like, it's almost like a laugh a second. Like, you know, there was like with described comedies as, oh, it's a laugh a minute. This is almost like a laugh a second kind of movie. Because, like, you know, even when, like, you know, there's not the big psych gag, they still pepper the little ones out, like, after they get to the dodgeball tournament, and they, obviously the big psych gag is their first match, they have to play with the S&M gear because their uniforms got switched. And after they win that first match, they're walking through the crowd and they see the Global Gym team on the other side. And White bumps into the kid coming from the concession stand, and he slaps it. What the hell?
He fucking slaps that drink so far as well. I love like that moment.
For no reason, just gets aggravated. What the hell? And Dwight just goes, that guy's a dickhead.
I love Dwight as well. You know, he just has those sort of little quips that he puts in there as well. So I want to talk about the training montage and Rip Torn as Patches O'Houlihan, because this has got to be probably, aside from, you know, White, the most wacky, biggest character we've actually got in the entire movie. Now, as a, you know, 13, 14 year old, I would just roll about in my bedroom watching Patches O'Houlihan, Rip Torn deliver these lines. And I was a little bit concerned that, you know, after not really seeing it for a few years, that it maybe wouldn't have aged particularly well. And whilst there is a couple of things in this movie that I don't think have aged particularly well, but I'm not really going to hold that against the movie too much. For me, this held up, like, this was still just as funny now as it was when I watched it, you know, when I was a teenager. And it's really interesting, you know, you bring up like the BDSM gear moment, like, because I hadn't watched it for a few years, I'd kind of forgotten about that. So like, it almost hit me fresh again, you know, when I watched it again, like a few weeks ago, and then I watched it again actually today, you know, just to keep it really fresh. So it was, I really enjoyed the ability to, you know, sort of have almost not fresh eyes, because obviously I've seen this movie many, many times, but because it hadn't been so long, almost a fresh perspective.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I definitely agree. It's, you know, I don't know how, I mean, I know how much I love it, and obviously I can see how much you love it as well. And I know there's countless people who love this movie, but I don't know exactly how it rates as far as like all-time comedies, because, like, you know, you when people talk about like, oh, all-time favorite comedies, you're going to hear the same ones like Animal House and Airplane. And, like, you know, I definitely agree, because, you know, with those particular two movies I just mentioned, They continue to be revered even to this day, because they do remain funny no matter what time we're in. Like, you know, those movies came out like real, you know, Animal House came out in 78, Airplane came out in 80, but they're still funny, you know. Sometimes, like, the jokes don't land because, you know, we're so far removed from that time, like it, you know, it's past, so like there's no sense of, you know, relevancy to the joke now.
Yeah.
But to me, like, if I personally have to choose a film like that, that's just like, no matter how far removed we are from like its original release, it's still funny. This is one of them, because like, no matter how many times I've seen it, I still laugh like I'm watching it for the first time.
Yeah, you know?
I don't think there's ever been a time. And I've seen this movie a boatload of times, but I don't think there's ever been a time where I just, like, even when I'm, like, I'm in a bad mood, this is one of those movies where it's just like I was stating earlier, a comfort movie where it's just like, I'm in a bad mood. And sometimes you can put on comfort movies and they don't work, because, you know, it depends on, like, how serious your mood, like, how bad it was. But Dodgeball always works. It always works. It really, really does. Like, I always find myself in hysterics, you know, at you know, and just the even like the incredibly silly ones, like, nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody, you know, like stuff like that. It's just like I have to lose it. Not just for the delivery of the line, but for also Christine Taylor and Vince Vaughn's reaction, like, oh, you know, like, Like a shock.
Yeah, I have to say, in that scene, I love the fact that he just sort of goes away on the back of his scooter and is just giving him the finger as Michelle drives away.
Right. I like how Michelle is basically just like waiting. Like, he's going there to try to woo her. And, like, he snaps his finger and Michelle shows up. So, like, he was just waiting this whole time to see what happened.
But you know what? One of the things you brought up there about this, you know, being one of your sort of comfort movies. This is up there for me as well as one of my comfort movies, up with things like Shaun of the Dead is another one for me that's like, you know, bad mood, put this movie on and I'll be laughing and things like that.
Absolutely.
And I think based on the sort of reaction I got, and obviously, you know, not everyone's going to love it. Like, there's always a group of people out there who don't like a certain type of film or a certain actor or whatever. And that's perfectly fine. I don't think this is not one of the more sort of polarizing ones. I think a lot of fans are in general agreement that this is such a great film. And it's that ability to be beloved and be accepted, because people, for a comfort movie, they really need to sort of take it into their heart and take it into their soul. And they obviously do that for this one. And I think it's, you know, you've got the fact that the chemistry between the actors is so good, the delivery of the lines is so good, everyone's comedic performance is great. You know, it's just a good, fun, like you said, laugh a second ride. And, you know, you've got moments that are completely batshit insane. Then you've got like really straight lines being delivered in a really funny manner, especially by like Vince Vaughn. And then you've got moments like when Chuck Norris shows up for just his 2-second cameo, and, you know, and William Shatner and things like that as well. And I think all of that combined really just allows the fans to really take this movie into their heart and become that comfort movie that you were talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. when you mentioned Chuck and his cameo, I just think about, like, because even then, like, you could tell it's a fun set, because it pans from the judges. One judge gives a thumbs up, the mean old lady judge gives a thumbs down, and then Chuck, and it just looks like Chuck just wants to laugh so bad. oh my god, I can't believe, I'm just here to give a thumbs up. And it's just like, you know, like, it brought this, come on, this movie brought joy to Chuck Norris, you know? Just working on it made Chuck Norris smile. The man never smiled a second throughout the 80s when he was making canon movies, but like, here he is with a big grin on his face.
He should smile more often. But that's the thing as well, you know, it just seemed like everyone was having a absolute blast making this movie, you know. Obviously Ben Stiller her name's escaped me, Christine Taylor, are they still married?
They're not
married anymore, but they were at the time of filming.
That was disappointing to hear that they unfortunately got divorced, because I know she had just given birth to one of their children right before they started shooting this. So she actually spent a lot of time just like napping between scenes, because she was so exhausted from working on the film and, you know, taking care of the new baby. So, but that was one of the more disappointing things to hear when they eventually separated and got divorced, because know.
That's it. They did seem like one of those sort of couples that were just like really good for each other. You know, they worked really well together. Yeah, you were absolutely right. It's a sad thing to hear. You were mentioning about, you know, her sleeping on set and things like that. I had read that as well. I can imagine actually, you know, apart from the fact they're all having really good fun, but this actually being quite a tricky movie to actually film, because you know, such a, I say sport, I'm saying it in inverted commas, but there's such a sort of sport element to it that's maybe sometimes, you know, a little bit uncontrollable and things like that. So I can imagine this wasn't actually the easiest movie to film, especially for things like continuity and things like that. So I can imagine it maybe got a bit tedious at times as well.
Yeah, I know that they like all the actors who participated in the dodgeball sequences said that those were the most difficult ones. Mm. Mainly, like, you know, because due to the exhaustions of playing those scenes over and over and over again. But the fact that when they had to get hit by the dodgeball, you know, because you have to act like, you know, you don't expect it coming, but you know it's coming and you know it's about to beam you dead in the face, right? And you have to act like you don't know it's coming. And they said that was the hardest part, was not flinching when this dodgeball is just coming, speeding at you full speed ahead, you know?
And they do a good job.
I can't imagine, like, you know, I play, you know, obviously, you know, we played dodgeball, you know, as kids, and that's the, you know, getting, you know, beamed with a dodgeball is just, you know, it's fun playing it, but it sucks, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, you know, all right, stand in place, ready, we're about to hit you with the dodgeball right now as hard as we can, and action, bing, you know? And you just have to stand there and take it.
Yeah, I didn't notice like any issues with that in terms of the actual finished product. Like, there wasn't any moments where I was like, "Oh, it looks like he might have flinched there." So they did a really good job. So props to all the guys who were involved in the dodgeball scenes. Is there any other sort of scenes that really stood out for you? Any other aspect of this movie? Because I know we've talked mainly about scenes and specific lines, but is there anything else in general that really stood out to you?
Oh god, where do I even begin? No, like, because there's a lot of stuff that, you know, I know you can agree with me on this, when a movie is really beloved to you, like, it makes its way into, like, almost like your everyday life, where it's like, I find myself quoting movies, like, it's just everyday life, like, when somebody, I ask somebody a question, and they take too long to answer me, I go, hello, anybody home, you know, so Back to the Future has made it in there, but, like, scenes where Stephen Root's character is, I probably should have rewatched this before the purposes of this episode.
Gordon.
Yes. Thank you. Gordon. They're at the dodgeball tryout.
Yeah.
And his family's there. His children with his mail order wife, and she puts the loser. And he goes, L for love. And the wife's like, L for love? No. And it's like, no, people got different meanings for different things. I think that's a nice special bond you got there with you and your mail order wife. I think that's nice. later on in that scene where they play the Girl Scouts, and and Peter beams the one girl. She's like, "Why would you hit a girl?
Yeah.
Why?" And then he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, honey. Are you okay?" And then he gets beamed, and like they're laughing. He's like, "You're adopted. Your parents don't even love you."
That is definitely something I would say. But you're right. If you love a movie as much as you either love this one or some of those other ones that, you know, you were talking about as well, you incorporate them into your sort of daily life, you know.
Yeah.
I mentioned Shaun of the Dead earlier. That's something that I quote relatively regularly, and things like Hot Fuzz over here is another sort of big, and it's part of the same trilogy, but they're sort of like big ones for us. And these movies that you take into your heart and they become your comfort movies, and they do become an extension and of your everyday life. And I think that's a testament to just how good these movies actually are. Because I think comedy movies, especially of this kind, tend to get a bit of a hard time from, you know, maybe more official sort of critic sites and things like that. They're never reviewed particularly fondly, especially, you know, when they first come out.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, you have to be like one of those classy comedies, like the silly ones are the ones that always get the, you know, I guess, you know, you got a lot of stuffy critics out there who just like, oh, you know, look at them being silly. Oh, no, I don't want to be silly. You know, give me a classy comedy with two guys drinking champagne at a table, you know, and they're telling each other life stories and it's funny. That's a great comedy. That's this comedy where people are getting hit with dodgeballs, you know. I'm no fun at parties, you know. Like, yeah, we could sense that by your review there, buddy. That you said they're being overtly negative about a movie called Dodgeball. You know, but you know, I can't see how anybody could find something negative to say. Like, you know, I mean, if it's not your taste, you know, all be too, like, you know, that's your opinion, and I'm not going to disagree with you, because, you know, everyone has their own opinion on something. Yeah. But it's like, when people just, like, you know, attack a movie like this, you know, and I've definitely seen it. I've definitely seen, oh my God, like, you know, how could you like this? And I'm like, because it's silly and it's fun, you know, and I get to escape for 90 minutes, you know, and just laugh at stupid stuff, you know, got to laugh at the Rip Torn, talking about drinking his own urine. You know, it's just, you know, I'm not looking, you know, for anything classy here. I'm just looking for silly fun, and that's what it gives me, and it gives it to me in spades, and that's why it remains with me to this day.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, no, I mentioned it earlier as well. Like, don't go into this movie. If you've not seen this, you're not getting highbrow comedy. You know, this is, you know, there's some potty humor, there's some crass humor in here. You know, you've got, like you said, Rip Torn telling them they're about as useful as cock flavored lollipops. And
I must say that is one of the best comedic insults I've ever heard in my entire life. It's something like, it's one of those lines where it's like you hear it and it's like, damn, I wish I would have came up with that.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, that is pure gold line. You're about as useful as a cock flavored lollipop. It's just like, bravo to, you know, Rawson Thurber coming up with that line. You know, it is absolutely brilliant. I cannot praise him enough for just writing that.
Yeah, and there was so many of them. You know, we've already talked about so many of them. You know, you were saying about white and no one makes me bleed my own blood. One of the lines, actually, I quite like, and it's another one of those sort of little ones, when they're in the training montage and they're having to cross the road and avoid the traffic, it's as Gordon, I think, is the way to go across, and Peter's behind him, like, encouraging him and going, just remember, it's only 90% metal. It's like, that's not reassuring at all. So I think it's so good because I think that's quite subtle humor, and then, you know, you've got really, really obvious, like earlier when White is having the meeting with Catherine and you just know, like, I'm White, W-H-I-T.
And she's waiting for the E. Like, you see the, like, the and.
You see the cogs turning in his head. And yeah, so like, they're whilst I'm saying, you know, it's not highbrow comedy, it's not, you know, it's not highbrow humor, there is different layers to the comedy that's in there. You know, you have some really subtle jokes that are just in there, little throwaway one lines, and then you have the big sort of memorable laughs as well. And I think for me, combined with all the other things that I've already sort of talked about, that's really why this movie works so well. The laugh, I mean, there's still so much of this movie that we've not even talked about. We've already been going for almost 50 minutes. You've got, I love Patrick Bateman.
Oh, Jason, yeah.
Jason Bateman.
Yeah, yeah.
Got an American Psycho on my brain there.
Yeah.
As Pepper, as one of the commentators, I think he's so funny as well. Things, you know, like when Peter puts the blindfold over his face and he's like, yeah, he's not going to be able to see very well, Cotton.
Yeah. Oh, they're great. They're great. Him and Gary Cole are just absolute amazing. With, he's one of the balls. He's ballless. He doesn't have any balls, Cotton.
I feel shocked.
Right. Or what was the one with Ouchtown population? You, bro.
Oh, definitely. Like, oh, yes. I'm trying to just hold it all back here because if I go, I won't stop. I'm gonna go watch this once we stop again.
Yeah, most definitely.
So if I'm gonna put you on the spot a little bit here, so if you had to pick one line, like as your favorite line, your favorite quote from this movie, which one are you picking? Making like, it difficult for you.
Even though I said that the cock flavored lollipop line is like one of the greatest lines I ever heard. If I had to, like, as far as like, if best, that is definitely the best line in the movie. But a favorite, I gotta be biased and I gotta go with the cup holders, you know. My gym has shareholders. Yours hasn't even got cup holders. Why would I want cup holders? Like, it's just like I was saying earlier, like I pause it and I rewind it every time because it's just a perfect storm of like, just, you know, because I love like we were discussing like little moments like that. And it's just there's a scene like that in a Walk Hard to Dewey Cox Story where after Dewey plays his first like performance and it causes a riot because he's saying the song Take My Hand, and the pastor's over at the house and he's like, don't you know we know what you mean when you say take my hand? He said, what are you talking about? It's a song about holding hands. And he goes, yeah, you know who also has hands? The devil. And he uses them for holding. And Dewey gives him that look like, what? You know, and it's like scenes like that. I guess that's why I also laughed at where Justin goes, what? When Derek gives him the thing. It's just like, see, like that comedic bewilderment, like what do you mean, why, what are you doing? You know, what is happening here? Like scenes like that just make me laugh. And that's my favorite one. Just the way he's just like, why am I my cup holder? like, how is that an insult? What is that supposed to mean? So, yeah, that's definitely my favorite. I definitely got to go with favorite. What's yours?
I think I have to, and it's the first one we mentioned. I have to go with fucking Chuck Norris.
The perfect ending.
It's the perfect ending. You're absolutely right. And it's saved the best for last.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, I know we were saying that there isn't much really that we can criticize about this movie. Is there anything at all negative you have for this movie, or are we just all good, all go?
I'm thinking of the movie. I mean, I haven't seen it in a while, but I'm very knowledgeable. Like, you know, I could remember everything.
Yeah.
So I'm is there any criticisms I have? If there is one, Lance Armstrong is distracting. His appearance in the film, like, cuz you know he's obviously, you know, a gimmick casting, and like he's supposed to be the superior athlete, and now knowing how much of a cheat he was, you know, and also he's terrible. Like his acting is just terrible. Lance Armstrong is terrible. He's a terrible person. And he's a terrible actor in his film. So that's the one mere criticism I could think of. Other than that, I have no problems with it at all.
That's perfectly fine. Lance Armstrong was one of my sort of criticisms of this movie. And like I said earlier, there's one or two jokes, but they're really, really, you know, not big plot points that haven't aged particularly well. But obviously, you know, that's sort of going to happen when you, when movies just get older. The only thing that I picked up on, and it's super, super nitpicky, is around when this movie is set. So in the sort of advertisement for Globogym that we get at the start, that's 1987.
Yes.
And then they were told that that was 6 years ago, so we're led to believe this is 1993. But then, of course, at the end, you've got Armstrong telling us about how he's won five Tour de France's in a row, which was obviously between 99 and 05, I think.
Yeah. No, yeah. I definitely have thought about that myself. Like, when exactly does this movie take place? But it's obviously one of those things where it's like comedies where, like, it probably... You know, in the comedy world, it just really takes place no place, no time. Yeah. You know, it's like in a void where it's just timeless. It's clearly supposed to be set in 93, but like obviously it's just set nowhere.
Okay. No, you're absolutely right. I completely agree with you. Just something that I was sort of picked up on there. We'll move on. Is there anything else? Last opportunity before we go on, we do some trivia and our final thoughts.
We could talk about this movie. Obviously, you know, judging by this conversation, we could talk about this movie forever. But I think in the time allotted, we definitely got all the good parts covered.
Yeah. So the next time that I'm on The House of the Screams, we'll just have our own separate conversation about this. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll just slip in as many dodgeball references as possible,
and let's see what Candy says about that. Like. Yeah. She's gonna be like, stop it.
Yeah, I might not get invited back for my fourth appearance.
That we definitely next time you come back, we definitely have to do that. So everybody's like, what the hell are y'all doing?
Yeah, just us in the background constantly. What?
Yeah. Most definitely, I'm with you. Most definitely, I'm with you.
Okay. Right. Let's move on. Let's talk about some trivia.
Movie trivia.
Yeah. There's not actually a lot left. We kind of covered most of it in the discussion that we had. We'll do the financials as normally. This movie had a budget of $20 million, grossed at the box office $168 million approximately. So massive financial success. Are you surprised we never got a sequel or something else with this sort of work?
No, because I'm surprised that I'm pretty sure maybe the studio tried. Like, hey, let's do another one. Mm. But, you know, like, with the talent involved, they probably have, you know, enough self-respect to be like, no, we accomplished everything we wanted to accomplish with the, you know, this original story. Yeah. What else is there really to tell? You know,
No, you're right.
And it's like I remember having this discussion before about the movie Neighbors with Seth Rogen, and they eventually made a sequel to that, and I love Neighbors, but I have not seen Neighbors 2, and it was like, oh, you're not gonna see Neighbors 2, and it's like, because what do they give us in part 2 that I didn't get out of part 1?
I have seen Neighbors 2, and you're pretty much spot on with what you're saying. Like, it's not a bad time, but it's pretty much the same, really.
Yeah. You see what I mean?
So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I did read that this, like you said, the studio had tried, were claiming that there was a sequel in the works, but Ben Stiller apparently had says, I have no idea what's going on with this. Like, this is news to me, sort of thing. So I think you're right, especially when you had so many sort of big names in this as well. Most of them will be away doing other things, and it would have been really hard to get everyone sort of back together as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so one of the jokes we actually didn't talk about that I kind of forgot was right at the very beginning when Peter wakes up in his house and he has the voice machine the message from the videotape store. And he's, I can't remember the titles now, forgive me, but he's like, two porn titles and then Mona Lisa's smile.
Yeah.
Do you know who voices that?
I don't recall.
It's Patton Oswalt.
Oh. Yeah. See, I knew, like, you know, my brain has so much knowledge about movies that I forget things, and then I try to remember, and then I'm like, oh, I'm gonna be so mad when somebody tells me this, and I'm like, I knew that, and it, you know, I'm getting old, so yeah, you know, I forget fine. Things now.
So yeah, he voiced that little videotape message. He also did the voice of the Kukuri show that White was watching when he was stuffing pizza down his trousers.
Yeah.
It's just so bizarre to talk about. The last bit of trivia I've got, so the famous sort of montage scene with the, you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. So all these wrenches were made out of rubber.
Yes.
But one of them was heavier or, I don't know, weighed slightly more than the other. Yeah. So it actually split open Justin Long's eyebrow.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, like, it looked like he took the one that we got on screen. It looks like he just takes that full on in the face.
Yeah, I do know that he, when he's writhing around on the ground in pain, he is not acting.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was really hurt.
You know? Yeah, you can almost tell just by the kind of noises that he's making. You know, it's not your sort of traditional pain in a movie noise, you know. Sometimes all done there where we've hurt ourselves or something, and you're in so much pain that you don't actually make any noise.
Right.
And it's almost a bit like that.
Right. I know exactly how that is. I'll tell you a funny story. When I was younger, my mother was on the phone with my grandmother downstairs, and I was walking down the stairs, and I slipped and I fell, and I hit my back pretty hard, and then I rolled off the stairs onto the ground. And it was literally just like that. Like, you know, it was, you're in so much pain, you can't make a noise.
Yeah.
So my mother, she thought I was joking when she walked over, and she looked at me just, you know, rolling around on the ground, and she thought I was joking. She was like, are you all right? And then, like, when I didn't say nothing, she just left, and she was like, I don't know what he's doing. So she just leaves her son in the middle of the floor, just like, you know, like just in incredible pain, because like my spine hit that step really hard. but like, you know, she's just like, ah, he's just playing around. And she just went going back to talking gossip with grandma. You know, as I'm sitting there like, oh, I think I'm paralyzed. So I share that sentiment.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, a really good job from Justin Long there. Sorry he was in pain. Is there any other sort of little tidbits that you have, or are we good to get into our final segment?
Talking about Justin Long, that I remember him saying that when he went to do his film Accepted, that he basically was doing a Vince Vaughn impression in his performance, because he was so inspired by Vince Vaughn's performance in Dodgeball that he was kind of mimicking that sense of like leading man comedic performance. Mm. So if you watch Accepted, that's Justin Long's version of Vince Vaughn doing Peter LaFleur in Dodgeball.
That's such a bizarre sentence. Oh, I'm going to need to go and rewatch that.
Yeah, it's all right. The movie itself is all right, but yeah, he's great in it.
Yeah.
And a young Jonah Hill. That's how I really discovered Jonah Hill in that movie, Accepted. He wears a a hot dog mascot uniform. He starts screaming, "Ask me about my wiener!" that movie's all right. That movie's okay.
Awesome, awesome. Right, let's move on. Let's get into the ratings and our final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
So, as always, we will start off with the critics. IMDb scored this at a 6.7 out of 10. Metacritic scored it at 55 out of 100. Rotten Tomatoes critics scored it 71% fresh, with the Rotten Tomatoes audience scoring it 76%. The critics' consensus, maybe if I can say it in English. The critics' consensus is, proudly profane and splendidly silly, Dodgeball is a worthy spiritual successor to the goofball comedies of the 1980s. So, Rob, out of 10, what will you rate Dodgeball?
Definitely, I gotta go with a perfect 10.
Wow.
To 10 out of 10 Dodgeballs, like, you know, other than Lance Armstrong distracting me, I see nothing wrong with this film. Like, and even that is just so minor, you know. I could just, you know, I could still laugh at his terrible acting, you know. So even him being terrible in the film is funny. So yeah, 10 out of 10 for me.
Awesome. Yeah, you know what? I can't really disagree with that. Because the issues that I do have, like the very, very minor issues that I do have with it, are so throwaway. Like, yeah, you know, they're not affecting any sort of enjoyment from this film. So I'm going to go with the same as you. 10 out of 10, cock flavored lollipops.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So yeah, like perfect 10 for me. This is one of the best comedy movies for me. You know, it came through my childhood, and even watching it back over the last couple of weeks, you know, I laughed as hard now than I did, you know, 13 years ago or 14 years ago or whenever, however long it was since I first watched it, you know. So I think that's a real testament to a comedy movie, you know, that you can watch it so many years later and still laugh as hard. So yeah, I'm going to give it perfect 10.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So that's going to do it. That's going to do it for this week's show. Rob, thank you so, so much for agreeing to come on. Man, I was really, really honored to have you here.
Thank you, and it's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me, especially, you know, to talk about this, you know. And I know I made this complaint about, you know, and I love talking about horror movies and action films, but it's like I so rarely get the chance to talk about films outside of that,
mm-hmm,
side of those two genres. So this was a good one, so I could talk about like a comedy, but to talk about a all-time favorite comedy of mine. So I really appreciate the opportunity to do this. Thanks a lot.
No, at all. It was one of the reasons we actually started doing the non-horror stuff, was so that I had an opportunity to not speak about horror films. So, you know, we occasionally do a little video game, but they're usually horror as well. So this was really the first proper sort of full-on comedy. Obviously, we've done some horror comedies, you know, we've done Tucker and Dale versus Evil, we've done Shaun of the Dead and a few others here and there, but this was the first time I'd really gotten to sink my teeth into a proper comedy movie. So, but no, like I say, thank you so much for agreeing to come on. Do you want to remind everyone where they can find you on the socials, where they can find the Action Drunkies, the House That Screams, all of your stuff?
Oh, absolutely. So of course, if you, my personal Twitter account, you can find me as at the Cine Drunkie. You can find the Action Drunkies official Twitter account at Action Drunkies. And if you want to check out what's going on with the House That Screams podcast, you could check them out at @House_Screams on Twitter. You can find the Action Drunkies also on Instagram, Facebook, and the YouTube. I'm forgetting my blood. I mean, if anybody has, you know, heard me on the House That Screams, they would know my my two previous relationship with doing plugs. So you can find us there. You know, the House That Screams is also on Facebook. So check them out. Please do. Shout out to Candy, my dearest of all my friends. And
Awesome. Awesome. All of those links will be in the description for this episode. Then we'll be posting them across our social medias as well. If you're listening to this episode, you can find them there and you can go and show some love. One last thing that I want to say before we do get out of here. Rob has also been writing some articles for us on our website. He's been giving us some previews to some horror movies coming up. So I really do urge everyone to go check those out. Our website is also in the description for this episode, btspodcast.wixsite.com/btspodcast. But like I say, that will be in the description for this episode. So thank you again for that as well, Rob, because that's really been awesome. I've really enjoyed listening to the stuff you've been sending in.
No. Thank you for, you know, just really getting my stuff out there, because I only really write about action movies anyway, so it's good to, like, you know, to get out there and talk about horror movies. And I definitely got a few more for you to go. I have to yet to write a review. I just purchased the film from Vinegar Syndrome Fun City Editions, their release of the Jenny Argutter film, I Start Counting. Okay. And I definitely got to get that to you. So so check for that.
Definitely. I'm always more than happy to get things in from you, and we'll put them up on our website. So yeah, no, thank you big time for that. But that is definitely it for this week's show. We've gone a little bit longer than we thought. It's almost as if, you know, you sort of lose track of time when you're enjoying talking about a movie.
It happens all the time.
Don't forget, you can find us on Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is at Behind the Screams Podcast, patreon.com/behindthescreams, and please go rate and review us on iTunes as well. Up next on the show, we will see the return of Toni Shivers. She was previously on the show to talk about her top five favorite horror TV shows. She's coming back to talk about Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. And that's a really interesting discussion on that episode as well. I know when I was on last time on The House That Screams, we were doing Dream Warriors.
Yes.
And a lot of people on there were saying, you know, their opinions about, you know, Friday the 13th as a franchise. What's your feelings on the Halloween franchise? Halloween 4, where does that rank?
Oh, Halloween 4 is actually one of my favorites out of the Halloweens.
Okay.
Like, I mean, it's essentially Halloween again, but it's such a, like, cleaned up, steroid-filled version of Halloween. Obviously, because it made sense that Dwight H. Little, the director of that film, went on into a career of action films such as, like, Mark for Death with Steven Seagal, and one of my personal all-time favorites, Rapid Fire with Brandon Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes sense, because if you watch Halloween 4, like, sometimes it almost plays like an action film when Loomis is sitting there doing leaps away from fireball explosions in the gas station, and he's shooting like he's chowing in fat, you know. You know, so yeah, but I do love Halloween 4. Halloween 5 is a different story.
Well, maybe get you back on for that one then, because that'll be coming up soon at some point.
Right. I was going to say, if you do Halloween 5 and you just want somebody to come on and tear it a new one, I'm your guy, because I cannot stand that movie. I hate that movie so much. It's literally going to be an hour of me just saying, like, finding a million different ways to say fuck this movie.
That's why you're going to make my job for that episode so much easier. But yeah, like I say, check that episode out. It's really funny you mentioned Brandon Lee there, because the last episode we just released, our last full episode, was on The Crow. So please go check out that episode, guys, at home as well. But one last time, thank you so much to Rob for joining us. Thank you to you guys at home for downloading and listening to this episode. And we hope you will join us next time on Behind the Screams.